Our special guest this week is Steve Gill, CEO of Gill Media and founder of The Gill Report. The governor's commissioner of education in Tennessee is in a lot of hot water these days, and Steve reveals the troubling details. My name is Kevin Kukagee, and with my good friend Gary Humble, this is the Freedom Matters Podcast.
It's not hitting me yet. I don't know.
1980 soft rock.
Oof.
Recognize that voice?
Nope. I'm lost.
Okay, let's put it to our guest before we introduce him.
Yeah.
You recognize that voice?
God, that's my era.
Okay, that's getting closer. All right.
So, wait, hang on a minute. Oh, I've heard this song. My dad, when I grew up, man, I can't believe.
Oh, now
dad,
making me feel even older.
when I was young, my dad, back in South Louisiana, he was the lead singer for a little local country band. They play all the local festivals and whatever. I mean, I can remember 6 years old, my dad and his band are in our living room, like practicing, you know, like late at night. Anyway, they used to play this song.
Okay.
So and oh my gosh.
The artist's name is The Pure Prairie League.
I would not
Vince
have remembered
Gill.
That.
Okay, but the important part to get to our segue is who was the lead singer for this particular song?
Now that you say it, yeah, that
Vince
absolutely
Gill.
Sounds
yes.
like Vince,
so
my
Vince
cousin.
Gill.
Is it really?
We are like distant, distant, distant.
Okay.
He got the golf game and the musical talent, and I didn't get either.
I didn't know that. Interesting.
So that's, you see the segue, right?
Yeah.
I had to find something that fit our guest today. So if our listeners have not recognized the voice.
You dug deep on that one. Good job.
Actually didn't take long at all.
Oh, nice.
It's funny. My mom was executive director of the Tennessee Association of Plumbing, Heating, and Cooling Contractors for about 30 years. And every now and then she'd show up at a meeting and they would come and apologize to her after a while because people kept sticking their head in the door and looking in and said, I'm sorry. People got word that Vince Gill's mom was in the lobby.
Well, some Tennesseans that listen to the show might recognize that voice, but we're excited to have Mr. Steve Gill with us today, longtime conservative commentator here in the state of Tennessee, doing lots of other things now, so you can tell us about that. But thanks for coming in.
Thank you. I'm doing media all over the country, all over the world these days. I'm working as chief of staff of a healthcare company, Intermed Resources, that we're the largest minority vendor for HCA LifePoint. So that's the real job. And then I'm doing, in the U.S., you know, radio and television hits on a pretty regular basis. I do Memphis a couple of times a week. I do Jackson, Tennessee a couple of times a week. Do Channel 17's weekly political show most every week.
Yeah.
But then I'm doing morning TV news in London on Great Britain News about once a week. I'm doing Russian television about once or twice a week. I was actually in Russia for their presidential election a couple of weeks ago as an international observer of their voting process, which...
Did you get to hang out with Tucker while you were out there?
I went to the same McDonald's Tucker went to.
Really?
Though, and man, it was clean. They were friendly. You know, and they serve real beef burgers. They have a law in Russia. They do not allow GMO. So the pink kind of burger mix that they make... Uh-huh. Not in Russia. So non-GMO potatoes. So the French fries were great, and their burgers were real beef. And it was the same one that Tucker went to.
I've been all the way to Russia to get a real burger at McDonald's.
And they, you know, they were friendly. It was great. And their election process, again, you know, the news media here does not report accurately on what's going on in the rest of the world by any stretch of the imagination. But I think most Americans still have a view of Russia kind of with a 1960s, 70 perspective of cinder block gray buildings and everybody kind of, you know, drinking vodka and walking slovenly through the streets. Furthest thing you would see. I mean, there are major parts of Moscow. It looks like you're driving through Vegas with, you know, tall hotels, flashing lights, not a cigarette butt on the street. Hmm. You can walk around Red Square, people getting off the subway, women alone at 1, 2, 3 o'clock in the morning. No fear, no concern. And then in the election process, and people say, well, you know, it's Putin, you know, Putin was going to win. Well, you know, they've got 7% inflation versus 1,500% when he took office. They've got 2.6% GDP. these are with sanctions. Mm-hmm. So they're happy with their economy. They're happy with the safety. They're under fire again from the world, you know, with this Ukraine conflict. So there's also some hunker down. We're going to, you know, band together. Right. So there's certainly that advantage that he has. But, you know, you don't change horses when things are going well. And things are going well. And even with the sanctions, they're doing well. But politically, what was interesting is they have 11 time zones. They've got the precincts that are just about like ours. When you go walking in, they're the same ladies that are working here, checking your photo ID that they require better than we do. Mm-hmm. They're, you know, checking your numbers, letting you sign in. Then you go and vote. They use paper ballots. You vote party rather than person. So there were, I was there in September when they were having their congressional and local elections. So you vote for the party, not the person. And then you go behind the curtain, you fill out your vote, then you come out, you put it literally into a large transparent box with a little place to put your ballot in at the end of the day, and it's locked. And at the end of the 3-day voting process they have, they open it up, they count with political parties and other observers watching, then they hold up the results so that everybody can see the results that they're posting, mm-hmm. not just, you know, hiding it behind a wall. And best of all, in every one of their thousands of precincts across, and most of them have about 1,500 to 2,000 voters per precinct, there is a video camera live streaming every polling place while the voting's going on and when the counting is
going
on. That
is a suggestion we've made here. Like, let us watch the process.
I'll share some of the pictures with you guys of, you know, literally rooms where the political parties are watching with a whole wall of video cameras being projected onto. They can look at every precinct in their state or in their precinct district and watch live as it's happening.
Kevin, so Steve says Russia has real beef fast food burgers, non-GMO French fries, and paper ballots.
Secure elections. Imagine that in Russia.
But when I was in Samara, well, actually, that's where I was watching the precincts this time. The Volga River flows through Samara. It's about 1,000 kilometers from Moscow. The Volga is about the size of the Mississippi. But when I was there, it was 3 feet deep, frozen ice. Mm. So there is that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's super interesting. You and Tucker are probably, what, 0.000-something% of Americans that have actually been to Russia. And it seems like the two of you walked away with similar experiences and feelings on what you experienced, what you saw there.
In September, I was in Donetsk, Donbass, Luhansk, the contested areas that were about 20 miles from the front lines at that point. And, you know, again, we're talking to people who only speak Russian. They identify as Russian. They've been under attack from the Ukrainians for the last decade. Nobody's been reporting that. And yet, when we observed the election results there, as people were getting to vote for the first time as part of Russia, they had voted 3 or 6 months before to join the Russian Federation. These people were thrilled to vote. And you're seeing 80, 85% voter turnout. When you go to the polling places, again, both when I was there in September and again just last month, they're playing music. It's festive. They feel like it's their patriotic duty to show up. And I was asking people, you know, why are you voting for Putin? He's, you know, why are you turning out? I mean, he's going to win. And one guy said it best. He goes, it is my country. It is my patriotic duty. And by voting for him, I feel like I'm shaking his hand and saying, thank you.
Hmm. Quite interesting.
Yeah. Quite a contrast too, to what's going on
to what's
in America
going on
right now. Huh. You know, it's funny. We kind of stumbled in our intro, but I was going to remind our audience that a lot of people, Steve, know your voice from WLAC and doing the morning program for so many years. And you actually had two stints.
Yeah, I was at WLAC, and then I was at WTN and doing mornings, and then I was back at WLAC. And again, now doing KWAM, Todd Starnes station in Memphis.
Right.
Fill in for him sometimes nationally, and then doing Jackson, Tennessee as well, and then again to continue to do stuff here. By the way, I've also recently done Bloomberg Dubai TV and radio. I did Iranian government TV the other day. Again, all by Zoom, all by, you know, the technology that we have today, having the opportunity, and if I do Africa
and
TV from time to time.
And they're bringing you on like for some, like sort of as the American conservative viewpoint. Is that typical?
Yeah, and it's interesting because this last one, the Iranian TV.
And I'm trying to fit that into the Iranian TV piece.
Yeah, the Iranian TV was a new one. The Iraq and Egypt TV I do is usually it'll be in Arabic. So I'm having a translator in my ear, which is a little bit, because you're getting a bit of a pause, but you know, mm-hmm. you know the question about halfway through, so there's not, I don't wait a long time to get the full question sometimes to start answering. Plus, like I do here and with you guys, I have my answers regardless of what the question is, so it really doesn't matter very much to me. but the Iranian one was interesting, because after we finished, he goes, "You are very fair. Do you have anybody who's more anti-Semitic and anti-Zionist and maybe would be on the other side?" I said, "Well, there are plenty of Democrats." Right. Wow. "You want somebody anti-American, right? I got it." He also said, "I would love to have you come to Tehran and visit with me." It's like, dude, unless I get a handwritten note from the Ayatollah promising a fatwa on anybody who threatens me or hurts me, I'm not coming to Tehran. Mm-hmm.
Good grief. That's a no-brainer, Steve.
People were asking me about, you know, "Aren't you afraid to go to Moscow? Aren't you afraid, you know, to be in the Donbass, you know, Donetsk, you know, the war zone region?" I said, "Nah, I go to Memphis."
Yeah, no kidding. and down the road.
And as of today, you know, during the recording, I was just kind of going through all the news on that. You know, we had 3 police officers shot, I believe, early this morning, right? And one has since passed. And the thing that frustrates me the most about that situation is one of the perpetrators, this 18-year-old male who was arrested in March with possession of a fully automatic weapon, which clearly he did not get legally, mm-hmm. right? So when you talk about gun laws, well, doesn't apply in that situation.
Never applies to criminals anyway, but...
And arrested him and released the guy on no bail. And next thing you know, we've got 3 officers shot. I mean, Memphis... And so folks online are saying, look, Memphis is completely lost at this point. I hate to talk that way, and that's certainly not the way I would communicate it, but I don't know how much more can happen there in a city like that where it's going to shake people enough, including their elected leaders. You know, and Representative Antonio Parkinson was tweeting, "It's just not right. Our streets aren't safe for our police officers." The way he wrote that tweet was insinuating that the issue is we have too many guns on the streets. Mm-hmm. You know, these police officers can't be safe because we have too many guns on the street. No, you got to keep the criminals in jail. Like that's the issue.
Well, and they've got to catch and release DA Maroney, who is literally one of those Soros elected, you know, catch and release guys. And I do morning radio in Memphis twice a week, and KWAM, the Mighty 990.com. focuses a lot on the crime issue, and it's really helping their station expand and grow their numbers because it is such a hot issue.
People are concerned
that they're facing, and I point out there all the time that the problem is they keep electing the same people who have created the violence and the poverty and the ignorance that is destroying the school systems in Memphis. You can't keep electing the same people and expect a different result. And yet, you know, they'll cry about, you know, the violence in the streets. They keep electing the same people. And the same black pastors that will go out and have a press conference, you know, decrying the violence and the loss of youth, usually young black males, are not preaching it from the pulpit that we have to do better in terms of providing the stability, the fatherless mm-hmm. leadership that these kids need, because you know you've got 85% or so illegitimacy rates. You know, these young black males are learning on the streets how to survive, and most of them are not surviving, and yet you don't have pastors stepping up. You don't have the black leadership in Memphis stepping up. In fact, all they do is, you know, try to blame the white folks in Memphis. Right. And, you know, it's not the folks in Collierville that are driving into downtown Memphis and shooting things up.
No kidding.
And I would caution anyone who says or takes the position of resignation about Memphis, because it's not like it's going to stay there. It's going to spill over into the next city. It's already happening in Nashville. Nashville has taken on like little brother of Memphis when it comes to crime and danger, as Nashville's been growing, becoming and looking superficially very metropolitan, right? People come to Nashville who maybe visited 30 years ago and they don't recognize the city. But I always have to caution them against what's going on under the surface with all of that. And, you know, there is a pathway from Memphis that goes up 40 on 840, and that 840 is a corridor. You know, the sheriffs are always there stopping cars. There have been car thefts, drug running. There's a lot of that goes on 840, which circles Nashville. Mm-hmm. So anybody who thinks that, oh, well, I don't have to worry about that, that's Memphis. If we don't get it under control in Memphis, it's going to spill over into these communities.
It's a great point.
And it's spilling out of our downtown urban communities in Nashville as well. I always use the term, with no pun intended, it is going to bleed out of downtown urban violence. And places like Brentwood and Hendersonville and Mount Juliet and others that think, oh, we're safe because we're in the suburbs. It's like the old phrase that Willie Sutton, the bank robber, used to use, you know, when they asked him, why do you rob banks? He said, that's where the money is. You know, if you're going to go rob, steal, and loot, downtown Nashville and some of the projects are not the place to find the money. Exactly. Brentwood, Mount Juliet, Hendersonville, that's where the money is, and that's where you're seeing this move.
So in terms of spilling over, like something just hit my mind. It's interesting kind of diving into school choice and then talking about our education commissioner here in just a moment. You know, the Senate version of the bill, one of my concerns, my main concern with school choice is the issue of putting public funding into private education and the future ramifications that may hold for private schools and homeschools. But in addition, what I find interesting, the Senate version of the bill, and they're pushing this really hard. So far, the House is dead set against it. This idea of opening up all districts. And so in real consequences for us here, like, for example, in Williamson County, The way the law is written, if a school has space, so if they communicate, if they have space, they are required by the way this law is written, to allow students, as long as their parents can transport them, from any outside school district to attend. And of course, there are some things happening with that would happen with TEESA, and the money would move from one district to the other. But what folks, for example, in Williamson County need to recognize is, under the right conditions, I think you've got a potential flood of Davidson County students now coming into Williamson County, and you're going to see that across the state. I mean, that's going to be, you know, from Shelby, you know, spilling into Tipton and all those other surrounding counties. What else is near Shelby? Fayette, right? Fayette County. Yeah. See, I know you guys out there in West Tennessee, but I have a lot of concerns even about that. And not even getting into the property tax conversation, but just this idea that is a massive amount of cultural change. Mm-hmm. You know, I think when you boil it down, I mean, the fact of the matter is people move into certain districts and people live in certain places because they identify and desire a certain lifestyle in those communities. And I just think this is a massive cultural shift that is being proposed by this legislature, not only in terms of threatening private education, but now just opening up school districts wide open across the state. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that the devil's in the details. Mm-hmm. I theoretically like the idea that the money should follow the child rather than the child have to follow the money. Mm-hmm. But how do you make that work? First of all, it's great if some kid in an inner city failing school where virtually none of the kids are at grade level in reading or math or anything else, great. You give that child the opportunity to go to public schools in better neighborhoods in Nashville or in the suburban areas. Are they going to use the subway system we have in Nashville? How are they going to get there, physically get from A to B? That's not going to happen. It's going to be, you know, a false charge of their ability to choose and get to where they're going. If they can get admitted to the private schools, J.C. Bowman at Professional Educators of Tennessee.
He's been on our show.
He's done some great work on capacity. You know, they're talking all this, you know, well, we'll put 20,000 students into private schools across Tennessee. Now, you've got a lot of counties that don't have any private schools.
Right.
Now, you know, we may be able to start the Gary, Kevin, and Steve, you know, private school and bait shop and put it in some of these places and just, you know, just to suck some of that money into our pockets and charge enough where people can come and we're taking that 7,000. Yep. But if you've got this, we're going to push these into private schools, there's not any capacity. You know, there's only about 3,000 seats available in private schools across Tennessee right now. So the vast majority of these 20,000 students—
Is that the number? Pause right there, because I think that's a great—that is something that I don't hear anyone talking about. Because, again, yes, the idea is year one, we're going to send 20,000 students and give them scholarships to go into private schools. So the number right now is—
It's about 3,000 empty seats. So
in private schools across the state,
of those seats,
where are they going to go?
Are people who are already there? We're just handing $7,000.
There we go.
Even Betsy DeVos has acknowledged that about 70% of the money, where they've done the voucher programs, is going to people who are already in private schools. Mm-hmm. This is just a giveaway to the elite, wealthy donors who are getting given $7,000 by Bill Lee and the Republicans. And by the way, I haven't seen really any media focus on the amount of money that AFP and American Federation of Children, look at the donations they've made to these Republican legislators who are getting overwhelming pushback from their school superintendents, from their school boards, from their county commissions opposed to this. And yet they're running down the aisle saying, yes, I'm going to vote for this because of the AFP and AFC money. And I haven't seen the Tennessean or anybody really doing a great breakdown on that.
Except for Todd Warner, who basically told them to stick it.
Yep.
And now Troy Weathers down in Cleveland, who is running for the legislature against Representative Raper, just issued a press release today saying, why isn't Raper doing his job? Our obligation is to do oversight. You've got someone who committed perjury and stole money from Tennessee, and they haven't been fired or forced to resign. And because Kevin actually still practices law, why hasn't anybody
not real
done
law. Entertainment law.
Well, it's entertaining.
It is.
Last I checked, and it's been a while since I was in law school, Brown versus Board of Education says you can't have a two-tier system. Mm-hmm. And yet even the proponents of this are acknowledging it will create a two-tier system of public and private, with private being funded with taxpayer dollars. That is a constitutional violation. The state of Tennessee is having to dig deep to find the money to do this now. Wait till they're also defending a massive lawsuit akin to Board versus Brown versus the Board of Education, and they're saying things like, "Well, yeah, we'll fight them in court," kind of like they're saying on the tax rebate that they're having to give. And the Scarametti, who's one of the best attorney generals I think Tennessee's had in history, says, "No, we will lose." And yet the legislature are being frivolous and callous with their money, our money, saying, "Well, we'll just defend the lawsuit." Yeah, and you'll lose, and it'll cost money.
Which is interesting because, as Gary and I have pointed out, that lawsuit approach, the legislature has never had the courage with other matters to say, we'll defend the lawsuit. When it came to what was the bill that the Memphis federal judge overturned last year, the child pornography bill and things like that, that's just one example. They always take the position that, uh-oh, we're going to get sued. We better not advance the ball, right? Suddenly with this issue, all bets are off. We're gonna defend the lawsuit. So what does it say about this particular legislation? Why are they so concerned? Why are they so happy to defend the lawsuit here, where every other initiative, they seem to find an excuse to say, it's the lawsuit. I guess we can't go forward with the legislation.
And I guess, litigators are waiting until they actually pass the voucher deal to see exactly where it breaks. But anyway, it breaks. They're already acknowledging it's going to set up a two-tier system of education, which is unconstitutional.
Yeah. And one of the reasons, Kevin, is this is the governor's agenda.
Yep.
His legacy. But it's interesting to watch where things are right now, though. Like, I'm actually sort of shocked to kind of believe this might die. I mean, it's having a hell of a time getting to the floor. And I think it's proving out that Lee does not have the influence he used to have with the legislature. I think you go back to last year in the special session we had on the red flag law. Mm-hmm. I mean, that did some major, major damage to the willingness of the legislature to put themselves on the line for this guy, for anything else, because with the red flag law and now in an election year with this really intense school choice debate, he continues to hang these people out to dry, and they've got to go back and face their districts over this. So there's a lot of sentiment that I'm seeing that they don't want this to go on the floor at all, because for many of them, a no vote and a yes vote is a lot of lost votes for them in their district in upcoming elections. And I think for many of them, if you're just looking at this politically, they're not really entirely sure which way to go, So there's not a huge appetite to bring this to the floor, which is interesting. I hope it dies a horrible, horrible death. I don't like the legislation at all. But
well, and now the governor's team is apparently behind closed doors saying, "Well, I'll just have a special session." That's the last thing.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine again?
Yeah, let's go down that path,
dude. If they adjourn and he forces them into another that's gonna be That's civil war. Mm. That is going to be a true Republican Party civil war, which I'm pulling out the popcorn for.
And again, these legislators, you know, particularly the rural legislators, are in districts where the largest employer is the public schools, mm-hmm. the public school teachers. Mm-hmm. Now, to me, it's been incomprehensible why the Democrats haven't done a more aggressive ad campaign,
right.
particularly targeting those rural legislators mm-hmm. and holding them to account, particularly some of them that send their kids to private schools.
Yeah.
So you're going to vote to give yourself $7,000 a year per kid, and that's how you're going to justify that. You're going to pay yourself at the expense of teachers. The latest version, I think, on the House side, eliminates a $350 million pay raise for teachers that's going to go to private schools. You're going to take money out of teachers' pockets to fund your scam that puts money into the pockets of people whose kids are already in private schools.
It's a hard sell back in those rural districts.
How does that moving money into the pockets of those whose kids are already in private schools improve our public schools? And ultimately, you know, I hear people all the time say, well, you know, it's my tax dollars. It should follow my kid. It's like the public schools are not just for you and your kid. The public schools are for all of us to make sure that we're educating kids so that they will not rob and loot and shoot, that I don't have to worry about my big screen TV getting stolen because we've educated enough people to get jobs and work. Public schools are there for the public, not just, well, it's my money and, you know, I ought to be able to say where it goes. That's a good argument, except it's not just about your money or your kid. And when your kid graduates from high school, does that mean you don't have to keep paying property taxes or taxes because you don't have any more kids in school? It's not about your kid.
Yeah, well, it's that. That's a great part of the, I've talked about that ad nauseum, this idea that it's my money, and the difference between private education and how we fund public structures with tax dollars that you know, just like I look at public education like we look at funding our roads. You know, it is another piece of the state infrastructure that we collectively fund with tax dollars, and you can't start singling out your $7,000 per child. I won't belabor the point because I've dove into that deep on several occasions. I wanted to get into you recently broke some news mm-hmm. on
that's what Fox, I was going to ask about
on Fox 17. Tell us about that.
Well, I don't know if I was clear enough when I said the governor should either fire her today or she should resign today when it came to Lizette. Or it's Lizette, but I think Lizette is probably more of an appropriate name. For folks who haven't been following it, Governor Bill Lee hired in June of 2023, who started about July 2nd, a woman from Texas who had no connections to Tennessee, hired her to come in as our education commissioner. She did not meet the legal requirements to be an education commissioner in Tennessee. There's a specific requirement that the education commissioner has to be able to teach in a school in Tennessee at the highest level they oversee, which would be K through 12 for the education commissioner. She does not have the credentials, does not have the academic credentials, has not taught, and doesn't have a teaching certificate. So when she was hired, she was illegally put into that position, and Democrats raised that at the time.
Yep.
You know, Republicans dove under the covers and covered their head and said, nah, 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 I don't want to hear that.
Do.
So let's stop for just a second there. Then how is it possible? Did they have to get a waiver?
No, the governor just said, I think she's qualified. It doesn't matter what the credentials are.
But we don't live under tyranny. This is not authoritarianism. The governor doesn't just get to say, I'm going to hire her, even though it's illegal. I don't understand that.
But the legislature has oversight, and they're abandoning their oversight obligations.
Unbelievable.
And it's again, it's as clear as it could possibly be. But to compound it, so she doesn't have the credentials. She isn't legally allowed to hold the position she's in. So 5 weeks later, she submits paperwork to get money from the state to pay her tuition to go to UT Martin online. So I'm not sure that this lady's actually taking her test or doing the work. She has a track record of deceit and deception. So I'm not sure she's actually taken the test online at UT Martin. But 5 weeks later, she submits a form under penalty of perjury saying that I have worked continuously for the state of Tennessee full-time for 6 months and qualify for this tuition money. Worse than that, and by the way, under penalty of perjury, she signed it, her chief operating officer also signs the form verifying that she's been there for 6 months when, again, it was 5 weeks when she submitted the form.
I missed that. That's the part I missed. I didn't look at this close. So that this is clear. So obviously, she signs on that she's been there for 6 months. The Who was it?
Chief Operating Officer.
And that signature was a verification that she had been there for 6 months?
Because that was her supervisor. Because again, mercy. She's the education commissioner. So the COO had to sign on the form as her supervisor.
So they've both committed perjury. There's not a perjury.
There isn't a perjury provision in the second one, but it's a false form submitted to the state to obtain money for her boss.
Right.
Don't know how you can get worse than that in terms of quid pro quo. Hmm. But the first one that she signed was under penalty of perjury. Now, I am such a boring guy. I spent a lot of time looking at this form, and it is clear looking at this form, first of all,
it's in bold letters.
It was not submitted like they typed it and submitted it to the commissioner and said, here, sign this. It was filled out by hand. By her hand. And if you'll look at it, you'll notice that her hand, when she spells out Nashville, is different than the COO who also spelled out Nashville saying where she was. Two different handwriting. Lizette filled out the form in her own handwriting, signed it, submitted it, and her COO signed it 3 days later. They're now saying, oh, this was an administrative error. It's like, well, can she not count? Because 5 weeks is less than 6 months. Can she not read? Because the wording on perjury was actually on there. So not only do we have an education commissioner who is not qualified legally to hold the position, but apparently is incapable of either reading or arithmetic when those are the two major issues that we have. And why isn't Glenn Funk, the DA in Nashville, going ahead and at least launching an investigation to determine whether she committed perjury?
Well, let's talk about, now what's the politics
and why,
of
and
that?
And why wouldn't the DA in Weakley County, where UT Martin is located, why wouldn't they pursue perjury charges? I get so frustrated, guys, at Republicans that'll scream and howl about the DA down in Atlanta committing perjury on the stand, lying to prosecute. We cannot tolerate perjury. Well, unless it's our education commissioner because we're afraid of Bill Lee or we're getting money from AFP and the American Federation of Children.
So why won't the Democrats seize this opportunity, right?
Yeah. That's my question.
Right? He's a Democrat. Why wouldn't he do this? I think this would be like a
pie in the face.
Yeah,
a
grand target for him.
And you would make your district that you like to have vote for you happy. I have no idea why he's not pursuing it.
Is there something about her policies that favors Democrats too much that they're happy with her job so they don't care about these things?
I think that as bad as the Republican Party is as a party organization, the Democrats are worse. I mean, keep in mind, they're down to basically two locations, Memphis and Nashville. Mm-hmm. They have a far left racial agenda with their party. Their agendas are, you know, transgenders and abortion. Mm-hmm. They're not even setting a foothold to begin growing back into those Democrat enclaves in rural Tennessee where they used to be yellow dog Democrats. Right. Now they were pro-gun, pro-life, low-tax Democrats, but you're not going to win those folks back with transgender agendas and abortion till the moment of birth. They're not even setting up to win back any opportunities. And I think they're, you know, as bad as the Republican Party is as an organization, they're worse.
So the media, though, has picked up on this story. Do we think it's going to get enough legs that make the governor uncomfortable having selected her? And is it going to go back? Is this new revelation, right, that you discovered with regard to her perjury going to shed new light again on why she was selected in the first place, what they tried to sweep under the rug about her lack of qualifications? Do you think it's going to go anywhere?
I think it is. You know, we've all been involved in politics for a long time. A one-day story doesn't hurt you. Two-day story, people start to notice. If it goes to 3, 4, 5 days, if you get more media outlets picking it up. And right now, the Tennessean broke the story. The Nashville Scene has written about it. Channel 17 is doing a good job with it. Phil Williams is supposedly tracking it down. So if that gets it into 5, one of the stations in Chattanooga and one of the stations in Knoxville have reported it. I'm on in Memphis a couple of times. I'm certainly talking about it. So as it gets some legs and traction, the key is you've got to advance the story. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think the next one is getting people to call Glenn Funk's office, the DA in Nashville, saying, why aren't you prosecuting this? And asking Republicans, if you object to what Fonnie Willis did on the stand in Atlanta, lying under oath, committing perjury, if you're screaming that she ought to be prosecuted, why are you tolerating this with a Republican governor and this education commissioner who literally commutes back and forth to Texas because she's not really here?
She still commutes. Oh, my goodness. I thought that she just came from Texas, but assumed that she would have lived here by now.
No, incredible. And again,
flaunting it, though. That's not just saying, okay, I had to move. That's flaunting.
Well, and I want them to, and I've sent to legislators, you know, did she pay the money back with interest. Now, she only paid the $20-something thousand back after she got caught. Did she pay it with interest for the several months that she, you know, benefited from the money? And again, this is committing perjury to get taxpayer money for her own benefit. Mm-hmm. She makes $250,000 a year.
Yeah, that's what Gary and I were talking about beforehand. You're making $250,000 and you're trying to
lie.
On top of the line, which is the real issue, but also it sounds like nickel and diming also.
And if we're going to, you know, be intolerant of Megan Berry and her escapades, stealing taxpayer money for her benefit with her travel and her security guy, why do we criticize her and allow the governor and education commissioner, and again, her COO, who verified on a form submitted to the government? Those are serious legal problems. And again, Glenn Funk did prosecute Megan Berry because it got a lot of attention, but then gave her a complete pass, gave her, you know, an expungement, so that despite being convicted of a felony for theft, she's able to run for office and hold a gun again, because, you know, he got a kind of sweetheart deal for her.
Well, I've actually got to go to Texas next week, so I'm wondering maybe I should call Lizette and see if I can bring her something from Tennessee, you know, if she needs anything while I'm making my way out there.
Some of what I'm being told, and again, it's worthy of investigation if there was anybody doing investigations, is that her trips back and forth to Texas may be being funded by an education group. So again, is she getting money outside of her own expenses?
Chase for Change or whoever it is, Foundation for Excellence.
Are they paying for her to go back and forth? Her husband's a big lobbyist in Texas for the Texas Medical Association and is apparently a strong advocate for abortion. So
of
we've got
course.
Abortionist liberals running our education system in Tennessee.
I did not know this nice little piece of information, Steve.
Because this is the best Bill Lee can do. We don't have anybody in Tennessee that could be our education commissioner.
So
I'm speechless with that last bit of news.
Wait a minute. Her husband is a lobbyist in Texas for a medical association and lobbies for abortion in Texas.
That the Texas Medical Association is adamantly for pro-abortion.
Oh, my gosh.
This is the best Bill Lee can find.
Do you know if our legislators know this, what you just said about her connections?
I've never heard that.
Again, we don't have any media that's actually going out and exposing this stuff. I mean, with as much disgust as I have for Justin Canoe, at least he's on the story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tennessee Lookout is to the far left, but at least they're on the story.
Yep.
Tennessee Star hadn't written the first word about Lizette.
Of course not.
Now, is it because they're getting ads from AFP and American Federation of Children? Maybe I'm cynical. But I noticed the lack of stories, and I do notice the ads. I noticed that the host on WTN... They're the only WLAC doesn't even have in Nashville any local host, but WTN does, and they're all adamantly pushing this. And again, when you listen to the ads on WTN, they're being advertised by AFP and American Federation of Children. Money talks, and in Tennessee, unfortunately, we don't have independent media, unless it's something like this.
Go ahead and turn on Michael Patrick Leahy. He's happy to make up some kind of story about me and drag me through the mud. He calls me a fringe conspiracy lobbyist. That's his fringe theory lobbyist. That's his phrase for me personally. But will he? Whenever the Republican Party is not holding to principles, you will never hear. You will never see the Tennessee Star go after Bill Lee, Cameron Sexton, Jack Johnson. I mean, any of those guys. They're untouchable. You know, this is all it's pay to play influence. You know, and this it's not news. It's crap.
Well, and again, there's not independent. Yeah, there's no conservative news. I mean, once I left Tennessee Star, it did not know what was going on. It did not talk about what's going on. It wasn't wanting to ruffle any feathers. And the good news is that less listenership and less readership means that their impact is less as well.
Yeah. I think in the last, Kevin, do you have anything in the last?
No, I'm just going to let you lead.
Well, just something national real quick, since we kind of mentioned abortion. I'm just to stick to the politics of it for a minute. I mean, I can't figure out what the hell is going on with the Republican Party and abortion right now, with not only Trump's statements the other day, but I just caught this video this morning that Carrie Lake put out. Did you see this? It's five and a half minute clip. And I'm blown away. I mean, the only way I can interpret this Carrie Lake video is her coming out as pro-choice. It's this beautiful music about being a woman and women deserve choices because, you know, she felt great as a mother, but not all mothers feel that way, and the economic difficulties of mothers and all these things. And so we have to be compassionate. It was the best produced pro-choice ad I've ever seen. And so am I wrong? Is my interpretation off? That because it feels to me that the MAGA part of the Republican Party is what we call it now, the MAGA party is going pro-choice. That's what I'm hearing from President Trump and from folks like Carrie Lake.
I don't think it's right to say it's pro-choice to say that you're going to politically, again, from a political standpoint, put the moral arguments over here,
right.
Put it just from a political standpoint to say, you know, exceptions for rape, incest, and the life of the mother are so limited that we spend too much time, I think, as Republicans fighting over stuff that rarely happens.
But they didn't just camp there, Steve. That's the problem.
Let me tell you, that part is we end up fighting over what virtually never happens and get beat up at the polls for saying, oh, you don't want to allow an abortion for rape. Incest, they just don't happen. Mm-hmm. And we're letting millions and millions of abortions take place because we're fighting on that turf instead of fighting where we can win. I think the Democrats get a pass in the national media and too often in politics for the late term abortions, you know, five minutes before birth, 10 minutes after birth,
or the New York,
that is indefensible.
Or the New York law, which allows after birth, right?
So let's fight that battle, not fight 5 minutes after birth, after conception. Just from a political standpoint. So I don't think it's fair to say they're trying to move, you know, in a pro-choice rank. The Supreme Court laid out, you know, a 15-week period that most Americans, when you look at the polling, think that's reasonable. I want to get the win to have votes in Senate and the House where we've got more pro-life members of Congress, members of the Senate, members of the State House, members of the State Senate, because what the Supreme Court did is pass it back to the states. So let's elect the right people that can get elected, and then let's move the ball after we get the power to do it.
But
you got to be in power.
So we moved it back to the states, but here's the problem with what's being argued right now. Because if you think about moving it back to the states, and let's talk about Arizona and Florida, because that's what Trump has addressed primarily in this last week or so. In Arizona, Supreme Court upholds a law on the books that basically bans abortion. You know, so where they had a 15-week ban on the books or something like that.
It went down to 6 weeks or maybe something.
So now the court has upheld this 1864 law, something like that.
Yep.
Which is in my view a pro-life win and part of an anchor in my opinion the Republican Party. And then you have, which this came out during the campaign, you have DeSantis in Florida who signed a 6-week ban. And the problem with the messaging that I've heard both now from Carrie Lake and President Trump is that it wasn't the rape and incest conversation was a minuscule part of their talking point.
But that's what Democrats beat us up on.
No, I get that. But the talking points they were putting out is that, in fact, I think Trump used, I think we can get something more reasonable, he said, in Arizona, meaning that we need to increase the weeks. And then someone asked him and reverted to what he thought about Florida. And he said, yeah, you know, there too. I think we can make some headway. So my frustration is that we've got major candidates in the Republican Party, and we are where we have created some wins in the pro-life space. We are pushing now for compromise. We're pushing. It's this – we talked about this. It's this push to the middle.
Just like we did in Tennessee.
Broaden the base.
Right? Tennessee already had the law in place ready to be executed upon – When the Supreme Court said we're sending it back to the states. And what did we do immediately without even someone challenging us? Our Republican legislators were saying, well, how can we weaken the law that was already set to go into place? Remember, we talked about that last summer.
So yeah, that's exactly what happened. That's the first thing the legislature did was
protect the doctors. But see, I think we've got to win the hearts and minds of the voting base beyond our pro-life base. And when we're getting beat up,
That's what I'm trying to figure out. What I'm trying to figure out is, are we really getting beat up? See, I think it's just smoke and mirrors. And I'm just – pro-life has always been, I mean, as long as I can remember, a major part of the Republican Party platform. And so now in several red states, we're winning that argument. We're winning legislatively. And now we're post-Roe v. Wade. And what all I've seen, I'll just say this, and we can camp here, but or close it up here. But all I have seen since Roe v. Wade has been overturned is this new push to the middle. Mm-hmm. That the move now of the party is to give ground that we've gained. And it's all about the fear is that, well, we'll lose in the general. We've got to compromise on
which
abortion
we did
because
in 2020.
We'll lose in the general. By which I think had to do with our elections and had nothing to do with abortion. So that's my, and that's another, you could spin that. Mm-hmm. What we want to do in terms of elections, we don't want to talk about election integrity. We want to talk about abortion. You know, we don't really want to talk about the root of the issues as to why we're losing elections. We don't want to talk about, you know, ballot harvesting and the drop boxes and machines and all the things that are happening. We want to talk about abortion.
But if we're going to talk about abortion, I want us to be talking about that last trimester when 99% of people oppose it. Let's win on that ground, which is an easy win, rather than where it's a little bit more muddled and a little bit harder. By the way, as three guys talking about this, let me share one thing that I want y'all to use anytime you get the opportunity. I was doing one of the Channel 17 shows, and one of the female liberal Democrat pro-abortionists said, well, you all really don't have the capacity to speak on this since, you know, I'm a woman and you're a guy. I said, well, first of all, speaking as a former fetus, I do think I have a right to speak.
That's second, Ronald Reagan, right?
That's right. Yeah. And second, as the father of two sons, I think that were both born early, I was there when they were 6 weeks, 7 weeks early, mm-hmm. in that trimester when you could have killed them, and they were the biggest guys in the intensive care unit. They could have beat up anybody in that place because there were smaller ones than that, fighting for life. So let's fight for those lives that are definitely discernible as life. And then the other one I would just point out that, again, as guys talking about this issue, remind these, you know, pro-abortionist women that half the babies you're killing are women. Mm-hmm. How can that be a pro-female agenda, right, when half the millions of abortions, you're killing baby girls?
That's some good, like, one-off. I can hear Charlie Kirk, you know, when he does his... I love his clips. That guy's got some great
speaking
points.
As a former fetus, I literally thought her head was going to explode.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it's great having you on the show, Steve.
Thanks, my friends.
You know, so much going on in Tennessee. I know you've got... sort of a platform around the world talking about these conservative issues. So do us proud, you know, and when next time you go to Iran, you know.
That one will be a while. Well, I'll go to Iran when our U.S. tanks are getting in just a few miles ahead of me.
Great to have you, Steve.
Have me back anytime. As you can tell, I'm still shy about expressing my views.
Yep, no, that's great. It's why we have you on here.
Thanks.
If you'd like to learn more about Tennessee Stands, visit TennesseeStands.org to donate, volunteer, or get more information about what we're doing to preserve liberty for the people of Tennessee. You can also follow along on all social platforms at Tennessee Stands. As Thomas Paine reminded us, those who expect to reap the blessings of freedom must, like men, undergo the fatigue of supporting it.